Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Good day to you. Thanks for tuning in to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem. Ted Ross at the controls. Joe Bender's working the phones today. It'll be a great day. We're going to talk parenting today because our campaign for president has been a little childish. We could talk. You know, everybody else will talk politics. So
yeah, it's out there, I think, if you want to find that.
Yeah, there's no shortage of it. I came across this quote. Marshall McLuhan says, the word diaper, spelled backward, is repaid. Think about that.
Huh? Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
We're going to talk things I wish I'd known before we became parents. That's our conversation today. I came across this from Irma Bombeck. She said, if I had to live my life over, someone asked me the other day, if I had to live my life over, would I change anything? My answer was no, but then I thought about it, and I changed my mind. She said, instead of wishing away 9 months of pregnancy and complaining about the shadow over my feet, I'd have cherished every minute of it and realized that the wonderment growing inside me was maybe my only chance in life to assist God in a miracle. I would have sat cross-legged on the lawn with my children and never worried about grass stains. I would have eaten less cottage cheese and more ice cream.
Yeah.
I'll affirm that.
Mm-hmm.
I would have gone to bed when I was sick instead of pretending the earth would go into a holding pattern if I weren't there for the day. And when my children kissed me impetuously, I would have never said later, now go get washed up for dinner. There would have been more I love yous, more I'm sorrys, more I'm listenings, but mostly, given another shot at life, I would seize every minute of it, look at it, and really see it, try it on, live it, exhaust it, and never give back that minute until there was nothing left of it, so writes Irma Bombeck from her article, Eat Less Cottage Cheese and More Ice Cream.
Mm-hmm.
Today we're going to look ahead by looking back and learn from the life and parenting experience of Dr. Shannon Warden. We're going to talk about her new book, Things I Wish I'd Known Before We Became Parents. And you can consider today's program a free hour of mentoring for your child-rearing questions. We do have some copies of her new book to give away as well, so we'll do that as we go along throughout the hour. You know, one of the key responsibilities of parents is to pray for their children. And I do want to remind you of our Faith Radio prayer team and where we pray not only for our families, but for the families in our communities and in our nation. And it seems like today would be a good reminder that praying for our nation would be a good thing to do.
Yeah, we will send out a weekly prayer list of things you can be praying for if you're on our Faith Radio prayer team. Just go to myfaithradio.com/prayer. You'll get information there. Myfaithradio.com/prayer.
Hope that you can be a part of our team. We'd be honored to have you join in with us. I did see a headline today online that described how to move to Canada from the United States after Election Day.
Head north.
Yeah, apparently that's it. Well, in a moment, John Stone Street's going to reflect on Chuck Colson's passion for civic responsibility and our unshakable trust in God. But I thought maybe just a couple of verses to reflect on from Daniel 2:20-21. Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, to whom belong wisdom and might. He changes times and seasons. He removes kings and sets up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. And from Psalm 107, verse 17 and 19, but from everlasting to everlasting, the Lord's love is with those who fear him, and his righteousness with their children's children, with those who keep his covenant and remember to obey his precepts. The Lord has established his throne in heaven, and all his kingdoms, and his kingdom rules over all.
Amen.
Today is the election. Have you fulfilled your duty? For the Colson Center for Christian Worldview, I'm John Stone Street with The Point. Someone told me recently that they missed Chuck Colson's voice the most during this election season. Well, today is Election Day. This election season ends and we'll likely have only a month or two before hearing about the next one. But here's what Chuck said in his last commentary on a national election and what he would likely say to us today too.
Our founders recognize that true rights come not from government, but from God himself. Yes, the elections are upon us. Don't be intimidated. Do not retreat to the sidelines. Go out and vote for the candidate of your choice. Vote as your conscience informs you. And yes, allow your faith to inform your conscience. But today of all days, thank God we still live in a free nation. So speak out, exercise your right, fulfill your duty, go and vote.
That is sound advice. Do all the good you can. Today, that means voting. For ThePointRadio.org, I'm John Stone Street.
All right, it's 9 past the hour. You're listening to Connecting Faith, and we have connected today with Dr. Shannon Warden. Shannon is an assistant teaching professor at Wake Forest University, where she teaches in the Graduate Counseling Program. She is also director of counseling and director of women's ministries at the Triad Baptist Church in Kernersville, North Carolina. As a professional counselor, Shannon has counseled children, families, young adults, women, and couples since 1988 and has served as an assistant to Dr. Gary Chapman since 2003. And she and her husband, Stephen, have 3 children. She's in the middle of it, ages 3, 5, and 11. And her and Dr. Gary Chapman have written this new book called Things I Wish I'd Known Before We Became Parents. Shannon, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Hey, Neil. Thanks for having me on.
We're looking forward to talking parenting. And by the way, let me just say before we jump into the program that we do have 4, maybe 5 copies of this book to give away. It's up from a Moody imprint and Northfield Publishing. And so if you have someone that you love and care about that is maybe soon to be parents or young parents, this would be a great resource full of wonderful practical information and some encouragement along the way. So check that out. You can sign up for that and give us a call at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. And, of course, if you have a question for Dr. Warden, you're welcome to join in the conversation. So, Shannon, let's tell a little bit about your kind of child-rearing experience. Great title, Things I Wish I'd Known Before We Became Parents. So maybe talk about one of the first things you address is the time it takes to be a parent. What surprised you about that most?
Well, you know, Neil, after you have that child, you realize quickly, my time is no longer my time. There's, you know, a lot of children's needs there that are just a natural part of growing up, and our great opportunity as parents is to meet those needs. So we become second, even though we still, you know, as Gary and I talk about in the book, we still have to take care of ourselves and make time for our own rest and our own enjoyment outside of parenting. But that does become the new priority once we have that child, and then thereafter maybe other children. So it's very doable, but that's certainly one of the first realizations that new parents are going to have. Your time is no longer your time. You're going to become a master scheduler.
Well, you're really right in the thick of it, too, aren't you, with 3, 5, and 11. I mean, that's just downright busy.
It is, I tell you. And we talk to parents all the time, both just informally and then, you know, also in our counseling offices. You know, these are, as someone said to me early on, these are long days and short years. And when you're working or you're involved in your community and your church, they really are long, long days. And they're wonderful days, but as you were reading there, that from Irma Bombeck, I love that. I thought that's exactly right. As true as it ever was, these are fast-moving times. We need to make the best of them because they're moving on, and we really want to, you know, enjoy these precious days, these precious little years that God's given us with our children.
As you said, we need to be master schedulers. Any tips, advice, or maybe things that you have done that have sort of just helped you manage the schedule a bit better?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that we have done and many, many parents are wise to do is just realizing mentally, just accepting this is a change and it's a good change. Sometimes that mental piece, we're somehow lagging on that. We have an unrealistic expectation. I still should be able to do everything that I ever could do. I should be able right now to, say, for example, keep my house clean, get to work on time, make sure the children's hat, if it's hat day at preschool, they've got their hat. If it's a homework assignment due, that it's exactly as it was supposed to be. You hear that and on. There's so many things to do in these busy days. And so that first piece that parents can do is just accept the reality that this is a different day. And some of the things that I used to myself now, used to busy myself with was, keeping my house straight and my car clean. And now, you know, I still try, but it's not as much of the priority as it used to be. So that acceptance is number one. And then you've got to just let some things go, as simple as that. Stephen and I used to play a lot of golf and softball, things like that, with friends. And we still do a lot of fun things, but we had to let a few of those kinds of things go.
Talking about things that we should have known before we became parents, and we'll kind of review some of the big ones. You know, one of them, the truth that you address is that each child is different. You know, we know that, but somehow it still kind of surprises us, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. It does. I have a good number of parents over time now who've come to me for counseling, and that's one of the big items that they're dealing with sometimes is, why is he, why is she driving me nuts? Why can't they just accept no? Why can't they do what I ask them to do the first time I ask them to do it? Now, in that moment, y'all know if as you're listening to that, well, that might not be realistic in the first place. But parents, out of our stress sometimes, forget that reality, and we somehow think this child should be doing exactly what we need them to do when we need them to do it. And that's not fair to us or the child. We really have to step back from that and recognize each child is different. God has made that child to be exactly who he or who she is. And, you know, it goes back to realistic expectations, loving that child, looking for the good in that child. And that's sometimes the pep talk that parents need. Stop worrying so much about the differences. Start focusing on what's right with each child.
I have three, as do you, and I'm sure there's you can sort of, you know, figure out child one and two, but the third one is completely unique and different too, aren't they?
They are. Right now, we had a couple of miscarriages along the way, and, you know, many couples can relate to that, and certainly that's something Gary and I talk about in the book. But so we've got an 11-year-old, and we've got a spread there between he and – or Avery. Avery's our 11-year-old. We've got a spread between he and Carson, who's five. And so Avery's kind of in his own place now. He's self-sufficient, just super cool kid. Carson, also cool in a different way, very different people. And someone, in fact, we were at a park on Saturday with some friends, and they were asking me, is Carson the typical middle child? Is he getting left out or overlooked because of the older and the younger child? And I was glad to say no. I knew exactly what they meant, because so many middle children do get, quote-unquote, left out in some ways or overlooked. But I was happy to say no, he's not. We really are mindful that he is a different child. He's in a different place in his development, and we really are trying to tend to him. Now, just under him is Presley. Presley's three. She and Carson are just 21 months apart. She is, you know, she's going through some fun. I'm going to say fun. Three-year-old challenges right now. She's got to be first out of the car, first in the door. We will go back out into the garage and come back in just so she can open the door for us. So, you know, and we're not upset with her. Now, I will say we get frustrated some just because that's hard, you know, when you're tired. But we know she's right on track. She's growing, developing, and she is very different than Carson and Avery are. So, whew, I tell you, parents, your parents that are listening, Neil, you know, they – I hope they're enjoying parenting. That's the main message that Gary and I talk about in the book. There really are so many joys. But just, you know, take a step back, breathe, know this is exactly the child God meant for you. No matter what the challenges are, God's going to help us get through it.
Well, in a moment, we'll talk more about a few things that we wish we'd known before we became parents. You know, things like how do we adjust maybe our parenting style to our kids' personality? How do we distinguish between misbehavior and just some of the accidents that come with child development? You may have a question, too. Dr. Gary Chapman and Dr. Shannon Warden have co-written this new book called Things I Wish I'd Known Before We Became Parents. And Dr. Warden is with us today on Connecting Faith. You can join the conversation. You can sign up for a copy of the book. We've got five copies of the book to give away. So we'll do a drawing at the top of the hour. All those who call in, just give us your contact information at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. Great resource to help you, someone that you know is just needing some wise advice in parenting, from Dr. Gary Chapman and Dr. Shannon Warden. And we'll talk more with Dr. Warden in just a moment.
I'd rather see a sermon than to hear. say. That's why I'd rather see a sermon than hear one.
Still true, isn't it? More is caught than taught, and that's certainly the case with our kids. They're watching us all the time. We're always modeling good or not so good behavior and attitudes and all those things. We're talking about how we can give encouragement to parents today, giving some encouragement to Dr. Shannon Warden. Dr. Warden is a professor of counseling, a wife, mother of three, and she has co-authored with Dr. Gary Chapman the new book, Things I Wish I'd Known Before We Became Parents. And we're talking a little bit about some of those things that we have to make adjustments, adjusting parenting styles. We kind of touched a little bit about that because each of our children are different. What's your advice for that on how we maybe just relate to our children in the way that, you know, they can best understand?
I personally don't know how parents parent without God in their lives. I in myself am a sinner. I'm you know, can be impatient. I can say things that I regret. You know, we all have these shortcomings as humans. And so first and foremost, I encourage folks, where are you at in your relationship with God? You're going to need that. You're going to need to walk closely with God through this parenting journey. I know sometimes we may say, yeah. I had a friend say one time, I believe all of that. Well, believing it and walking it are two different things. I know for Stephen and I, we are constantly talking about, and certainly we're encouraged through our church as well, active church going and involvement at church. We're encouraged through that. We talk a lot about what is it that God is doing in our lives right now, in our parenting, in our marriage, in our finances, et cetera. What is he doing? What is it he is saying to us? So first and foremost, we are, and that's something Gary and I talk a lot about with parents. We encourage parents, where is your relationship at with God? He is the master. He is the perfect parent, the master parent. And so we can take a lot of instruction from him directly and then through his word. So, you know, then with that in tow, then you know, some of the personality pieces get a little easier to deal with. Are some folks still going to be impatient, maybe have, you know, tend to the control side of things? Yes. And, you know, back to our relationship with God, he's always calling us to lay down that control, to submit to him, to follow him. So parents, if you're doing that without God, wow, I don't know. I know you can do it. I see people do it, but it's not as easy as it is with God. So, you know, we have to follow the Lord and then just really look at ourselves. How are these things causing tension with our children? Is it not just the child's growing up type of normal behaviors that are frustrating, but maybe my own interaction with him or her, my reaction to him or her? So we, you know, I guess the plank effect comes into account here. Am I looking at the sawdust, the speck of wood in my child's eyes when they're misbehaving, or no, am I focusing more on the plank in mine? So those, you know, I know that's a lot, but definitely that is the bedrock of how to, you know, in our talks with parents, how to approach parenting.
You mentioned, you know, misbehavior. That, of course, seems like that comes in so many ways all the time. But, you know, some of that is just part of our kids' just natural development, right? They just maybe they break stuff or have accidents, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're misbehaving. How can we understand the difference?
That's right. Well, some of your listeners, Neil, may be parents who are already past the little kid stage. They may even be grandparents. And wherever you're at on the parenting continuum, as you're looking at children's behavior or grandchildren's behavior, it's very much them practicing. This is their rehearsal for life. You know, it's their practice for adulthood. We can't hold them to the same standard that we hold ourselves to. And in that way, we sometimes are missing the standard ourselves. So we got to be really careful about holding our children up to a standard that is not developmentally appropriate and that they're not developmentally able to reach. We can do a lot of things to come alongside our children. I use the example of helping Presley pour milk. In fact, she just was pouring some milk this morning in the kitchen. At 3 years old, what does she want to do? I'm going to do it myself, Mom.
Sure.
And so, you know, I supervise and support the milk container there. But, you know, I want her to experience the opportunity to do that for herself. I want to be able to say to her, you knew what to do. You know what to do. Those are really encouraging messages. So, right, I mean, we just have to keep that truth, Neil, there that you said, that children are, they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. They want to try things. They want to grow, experiment, explore, all of these things that God intended. And he certainly needs us and wants us to be the good stewards, the good shepherds of that process. But, you know, so that's a lot of times just coming alongside, allowing them to do some things that make sense. Obviously, I'm not going to let her pour the milk unsupervised, but you know, just trying to be realistic in our expectations and our awareness, and just, you know, there again, slowing down our busy pace to come alongside that child so that she or he can learn the things they're going to need to know in this life.
Oh, that's always kind of the challenge, isn't it? It's making those boundaries, those rules, so, you know, you can have freedom within this area. But talk about some guidelines for making good rules. You address that as well.
We do. You know, that starts off with just trying to have some, as best we can, so Stephen and I, as best we can, to have some understanding of mutually agreed upon rules. You know, and that sometimes is decided on the fly. You know, it has been for us. You know, that we maybe would have, you know, the basic understanding of, okay, so just the easy one there is children need to be seat belted in the car. That's the law. So the law helps us with that. But let's just say bedtimes, for example. That's something that parents can agree upon mutually, and maybe discipline for misbehavior that's now a pattern of misbehavior, not necessarily the one-time or the two-time type of misbehavior. That can absolutely just be accidental or unintended by the child, but patterns of misbehavior, my husband and I can decide together mutually agreeable responses, mutually agreeable discipline for those types of misbehaviors. And then, you know, we want to always in our rulemaking, is it reasonable? What's the old saying? Does the time fit the crime? You know, that kind of thing. You know, we want to be reasonable with our children's best interest at heart. And so there are a lot of creative ways that parents can teach a lesson, teach a moral truth to children. There are just a lot of creative ways. It doesn't always have to be heavy-handed, but certainly always it should be reasonable. And as children get older, it can also be discussed with the whole family, you know, so that they understand this is where mom and dad are coming from. This is what's going to happen if and when you do such and such. So those are some of the basics right there that we talk about in the book.
Dr. Shannon Warden is my guest. She's an assistant teaching professor at Wake Forest University, and she teaches in the graduate counseling program, also serves as director of counseling and director of women's ministries at Triad Baptist Church in Kernersville, North Carolina, and she has served as an assistant to Dr. Gary Chapman for the past 10, 13 years or so. Her and Dr. Chapman have written a great new book called Things I Wish I'd Known Before We Became Parents. We've got some copies to give away, and you can sign up for one of those right now at 877-93-FAITH. It's 877-933-2484. If you have a question, parenting question, we've got some great advice yet ahead with Dr. Shannon Warden. Stay tuned for more as we talk about, you know, the money and the time and the marriage, all that ahead. Parenting and love, and it takes energy and insight. We're getting some great insight and encouragement today. You know, children affect your time, your money, and your marriage, and that's just the beginning. Talking with Dr. Shannon Warden today, who is a co-worker with Dr. Gary Chapman. She's served as an assistant to Dr. Chapman for a number of years, and she is also an assistant teaching professor at Wake Forest University, where she teaches in the graduate counseling program. Dr. Chapman and Dr. Warden have co-written the book called Things I Wish I'd Known Before We Became Parents. I'm just reviewing some of those important ones. And Shannon and her husband have three children, ages 3, 5, and 11. So she's in the middle of it. She knows and understands that. And one of the things that you address is just the whole area of anger, the emotions that our kids go through. How do we help them process their frustrations?
Well, Well, that's a challenge for many parents when their child is angry, right? Because sometimes if it's out in public, it might be an embarrassment to us. And so now not only are we dealing with the normal parenting stress we might feel, but now add to that maybe the embarrassment of being out in public, and maybe we have that somewhat unrealistic expectation that, you know, people are going to judge me in that moment. And be that as it may, they very well may be doing that. That's not the headline at the moment. The headline, be it in public or at home, is my child needs me. This anger is not something to be pushed away as a maybe something that we just don't do that. We just don't get angry. No, we do get angry in life. And so that goes back to what we were saying just a few minutes back. Children are learning. They're growing, developing, not only the things we can see, but all of that amazing brain development that's happening all along the way. And so sometimes we understand where the anger came from. It maybe came from, as I said, of my little girl. If she doesn't get out of the car first right now, she pitches a fit. That's what we call it in North Carolina, pitches a fit. And, you know, that's part of her, you know, really normal development. Now, do we just you know, shun her or, you know, try to get more angry than her to shut down her anger? No. And of course, we get upset. We get frustrated. Parents do that, and parents, that's okay. But, no, we want to see that. Again, it's kind of her in her place of development right now, experiencing anger, experiencing what it's like to share, what it's like to not have to be first. We've got to make some time. We've got to be patient with that and not try to outdo her with our own anger, but to outdo her with grace. And then also, I don't mean to say that it's without correction. We do. We need to correct and give alternatives. I said to Presley, with our three-year-old, I said to her just this morning, Presley, say it. Don't cry it. Say it. Because in that moment, that was the direction that I needed to give her. She was crying for something she wanted, and she needed to be able to just use those words. And that's an example of recognizing developmental appropriate anger, seeing it in context, not trying to outdo our kid with anger. That does not work out very well. I've done that before. I know it does not work out very well. And instead come alongside them, trying to teach them through, trying to sometimes just hug them through. You'd be physically close to them while they're working through their anger. So I know that's several points I'm throwing out there. There's lots of that in the book, but those are the highlights of, you know, how we can approach our children's anger.
Well, Dr. Chapman, of course, has written a number of bestsellers related to love languages, and not too long ago he wrote one on forgiveness, and certainly it seems like maybe forgiveness is something where we didn't always expect, probably as parents, before we became parents, that we'd have to be asking our kids forgiveness.
That's the truth. Some of us didn't grow up with parents that apologized. I myself had very, all in all, healthy parents. They weren't perfect, but they taught me a lot, sometimes how to do and sometimes what not to do. And, you know, I hope as parents, Stephen and I are doing even better, perhaps, than our parents. And, again, both sets of those parents have been wonderful to us. But the apology is something that I know we have learned more. I didn't so much hear that out of my parents. My dad in particular, I've thought about that, and he and I've talked about that in later years. And, you know, that's something we, and I'll only say of him too, that was something he didn't learn. And so what do? You oftentimes parent the way you saw your parents parent. And then maybe you pick up a few pointers, you get a different insight, you maybe decide you want to do some things different, and then you're then setting a platform for your children to build off of. Saying I'm sorry, and a meaningful I'm sorry. Not a sarcastic I'm sorry, but a meaningful apology. That's one of those things that I have learned now after having become a parent. That's important. Children need that. They're listening for it. It reminds them, hey, I love you. We are together in this. You are my child. There's nothing you can do that is going to make me love you less. And then also, let me say too, them hearing me apologize, it's not only their wrongdoing, but it's my wrongdoing at times. Hearing me apologize also restores the relationship. That relationship, that connectedness, is going to be something that we need all the way through. Older parents I've talked to, that's one of the things they've said many times sitting with me in counseling. I wish I had done this differently. I wish I had done that differently. without fail, one of the things they wish they had done was to connect better, to connect deeper relationships. And that oftentimes involves saying I'm sorry when a sorry is needed.
Well, you know, speaking of restoring the relationship, marriage goes through seasons of strength and weakness, and certainly child rearing is a time where a marriage is stressed. So say a word about, as you address in the book, about keeping your marriage strong while you're parenting.
Mm-hmm. That chapter is Marriage Doesn't Thrive on Autopilot. I know parents, you know parents, who later on they realize, I wish I hadn't have done that. In the case of marriage, I wish I had have spent more time. I wish we had prioritized our marriage. Maybe we would still be married. Or maybe if they're married, maybe we would be closer today. I hear that so frequently. Some of your listeners are maybe experiencing that or have experienced that, where they let the marriage go. That is very, very easy to do in the busyness of life, of work, of parenting. And yet, that's what the book is about. That's what these voices of wisdom say. You know, those older parents, that's what they say. Hey, younger parents, younger couples, start right now. No excuses. No, we don't have a babysitter. No, we're too tired. No, we don't have the time. No excuses. Start now prioritizing the marriage, deciding that that's going to be what you have years down the road when those precious children have grown up and are having children of their own. So start right now prioritizing your marriage. And just even in the littlest ways, speaking each other's love language, making time for each other, kind words, touch, all of these great love languages, tools. Right now, so that's the wisdom that we hear older parents, parents who are couples who are further along the line, they say back to us, newer and younger parents, prioritize your marriage. That's not going to thrive on autopilot. You got to fly that plane. It's not going to fly itself.
Shannon, you counsel regularly children, families, young adults, women, and couples. When they come in the counseling office, what's the maybe the most frequent question or issue that you're dealing with?
Well, interestingly enough, forgiveness and self-compassion are common themes in the clients that I work with, common, that I couldn't forgive myself. I spoke harshly, or I've my marriage is on the rocks. I'm estranged from my mom. Yeah, you name it. But at the core of that is oftentimes forgiveness, self-compassion. Oh, I also have had many women in particular who will judge themselves critically. I should be doing this. Other women are doing this. Other women are more beautiful. Other women are better moms, better wives. There again, same issue, lack of self-compassion, lack of self-forgiveness for, you know, maybe somehow being less than what they feel they should be. There, again, you're hearing it, is that unrealistic expectation. Who decided that? That's sometimes a message that a client and I will work through, is where did that message come from, or where did that rule come from that you needed to be this or that? That's a very freeing truth to come to, you know what, I don't have to be that. I would like to be better. That's fine. But the critical, the judgmental, the unforgiving, the lack of self-compassion, those just don't do much good for us. And so that's oftentimes what people are dealing with in counseling, trying to let go of that, trying to see in some new ways, trying to be more forgiving, more self-compassionate, just as God is forgiving and compassionate towards us.
Now, when you, as you were talking about that, I know toward the end of the book you address the joy in raising children, so we don't let regrets drag us down. So maybe what comes to mind for you when you think about, you know, moments of joy in child rearing?
Oh, there's so many. Whoever's listening today, God brought the exact listeners to this program that needed to be here today, and I'm just thankful to Him for that. Look around, listen to those children singing in the back seat. Listen at them playing. Our children all are so imaginative, and I regularly watch them, listen to them play. I get involved with them playing. Parents, grandparents, make sure you're doing that. But I get involved with them. We color. We We build, we tear down, we laugh. I could not have imagined all the joy that these three beautiful children bring into our lives. And, you know, that's one of the things. If I do at times lose my temper or wonder how is it I'm going to be able to do this, this, and this, and I still haven't done homework with Avery or I haven't done, you know, this and that, that overwhelming, that very common sense of overwhelming that we have as parents is something that does, Neil, as you say, it can bog us down. That in the end is not going to be what we are going to remember, the things we missed in terms of deadlines or missed messy houses or whatnot. No, it's going to be the singing, the coloring, the building, the laughing, the playing outside in the leaves, the taking walks around the neighborhoods, all of that. And that's way more joy than I ever knew before becoming a parent. I hope parents and grandparents are listening and just being encouraged, encouraging your, if you are a grandparent, encouraging your adult child. These are great days. Rest when you can. Fall on your knees regularly with God. Walk closely with God and enjoy every second because it surely is filled with lots of joy.
Good way to wrap up our conversation today with Dr. Shannon Warden. Dr. Shannon Warden, along with Dr. Gary Chapman, have teamed up to write a great new book called Things I Wish I'd Known Before We Became Parents. And we do have some copies to give away, and we'll do that at the top of the hour. So if you're not signed up for that, give us a call now at 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. Dr. Shannon Warden, who is a professor of counseling, a wife, and a mother of three. Joining us today, Shannon, thank you so much for sharing a bit about your life and your encouragement with us today.
Neil, thank you. And folks, let me say they can find more on that book at moodypublishers.com or at my website, Shannon Warden. This is my first and last name, shannonwarden.com. And it's been a pleasure to be on with you, Neil. Thank you.
You're listening to Connecting Faith.
Lord, I want to be just like you.
Raising children, it's a challenge, but what a wonderful privilege. Not too long ago, we talked with Paul David Tripp, who's a pastor and author and international speaker. He's written a new book on parenting, about gospel principles that can radically change your family. And I thought we'd just share a highlight from that conversation where he talked about how we exercise authority as an ambassador for Christ.
Here's what I began to hear, that parents, Christian parents, good-meaning, well-intending Christian parents, thought that their job was to set up a neat system of rules that would manage and control the behavior of their children. And if they did that, their children would be okay. Now, do your children need rules? Yes. But what we have to understand about God's law is that it's great at revealing sin. It exposes what's in our hearts. It's a great guide for life. But the law has no ability whatsoever to change or transform your children. And so our children need something more than that, because if the law could change our children, Jesus would have never had to come. It wouldn't have been necessary. He had given his law. The fact that Jesus came meant if we're really going to be changed, we need something more than just a set of rules.
We like rules, though. I mean, systems work for us. We feel comfortable with that. Grace seems messy, I suppose.
Yeah, it does. And I think that one of the problems is, I think there's a pretty widespread misunderstanding of grace. I think often when parents hear, give your children grace, what they hear is be permissive. Don't emphasize authority. Grace is not about being permissive. Grace is not about calling wrong right. If wrong were right, there would be no need for grace. Grace always sees wrong as right, wrong as wrong. But what grace does, rather than just angry words and punishment, grace asks the question, what is God seeking to do in this person's life? How is God seeking to change this person, and how can I be part of it? So I move toward the person as God's tool rather than just saying, I'm going to enforce the punishment, I'm going to say condemning words and walk away.
Probably most of us think in terms of Ephesians 6 as a key passage on parenting. Say a bit more about that passage, and I know that you also suggest that there's maybe a better parenting passage in the Bible. So talk about Ephesians 6 and then going beyond that.
I think Ephesians 6 is a wonderful passage. It really defines how important obedience is and how important honor is. But one of the things I love about Ephesians 6 is that moment where it says, parents or fathers, don't provoke your children to anger. That means that as I exercise authority, I have no independent authority. My authority is representative authority because I'm an ambassador. That means that every time I exercise authority, it must be a beautiful picture of the authority of God. Because I want to be used of God to take children who naturally resist authority and show them that authority is not a crushing thing. Authority is a beautiful thing. And so the way that I exercise authority is very important. But I think there's another passage that has huge application to parenting that we miss, and that's what we call the Great Commission. When Jesus commissioned his disciples and said, all power is given to me in heaven and on earth. Go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations, teaching them to observe everything I've commanded you, and lo, I am with you always. What a beautiful passage. God says, I've got all the authority and the power that you could ever want for this task, so you go. And what's the task of parenting? Not producing athletes or musicians or college graduates first. The first primary goal is to make disciples of my children, because it's only when they willingly surrender their hearts to God, not just in a salvation way, but in every area of their life, that they will live the way they're supposed to live. How do I do that? I look for every teaching opportunity that God will give me. And as I do that, I know he didn't just send me, he's going with me. And in every moment, I'm not just reliant on my power, but on his power. Neil, I want to say it this way. God doesn't give parents children because they're able. He gives parents children because he's able.
Good words from Paul David Tripp from a conversation we had not long ago on parenting, 14 gospel principles that can radically change your family. We've got that posted on our website, the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com. And we'll very shortly post our conversation with Shannon Warden, Dr. Warden's book with Gary Chapman called Things I Wish I'd Known Before We Became Parents. You'll get some great insight and some encouragement for parenting coming up on if you go to Connecting Faith at myfaithradio.com. Well, today, parents are wrestling with the issue of voting, and Joe Bender recently talked with Karen Eamon. Karen's a Proverbs 31 ministry speaker, best-selling author, and writer for Encouragement for Today, and she's written a great book called Keep It Shut, What to Say, How to Say It, and When to Say Nothing at All, and her new book is called Listen, Love, Repeat, and she has some thoughts about the election.
Well, Karen Eamon has written a lovely new book called Listen, Love, Repeat, Other-Centered Living in a Self-Centered World. Karen, you have such a great premise in your book that we are to listen to what others would like us to hear and then love them despite of whether or not we agree with them. And here we are on this election day where we're going to have a new president late tonight. So regardless of whether or not someone's candidate wins or loses, how do we demonstrate this concept that you talk talk about in Listen, Love, Repeat, a loving one another even after the results come in?
Oh, this is the day to really put our, I don't want to say our money where our mouth is, but, you know, our words maybe where our faith is, because so often we are passionate during this time. I mean, we've got our candidate we think we want, you know, to lead our country. We've got our issues that we're fighting for, and we're passionate about it. And sometimes our passion can override our knowledge in our brain that we know we're supposed to love. We're supposed to love one another. But so often we're too busy trying to express our opinion or trying to maybe be a little bit upset about what the results are. I mean, there's all kinds of emotions just flying everywhere. But at the core of what happens today, we need to remember we are commanded to love. We're not told in the Bible, love one another as long as you agree with them politically. You know, love one another as long as your candidate wins and the other one doesn't. You know, regardless of what happens, we're supposed to love. Yes, there are issues we're passionate about, but there are people that are on the other side of the issues. And we sometimes can't untangle the issues from the people because we're so passionate about the issues. So I would just really challenge all of us, and I'm talking to myself too, to just remember it's all about people. It's all about relationships. What's going to happen is going to happen. And if our guy or gal doesn't win, or our guy or gal does win, we are going to have to answer for how we behave today. 5, 10, 15 years from now, whoever won probably will not be in office anymore, but we are going to still have the day to look back on and see what really mattered. You know, what mattered that day? Was it who won, or was what mattered eternally that day? How we behaved when we found out who won. So we need to be thinking about eternity, about the future, and what really is important today. As much as we think it's if our guy or gal won, what's really important is how we treat other people when we're interacting over the issues and over the race. It's hard, but it can be done. Love one another, period. Not if they agree, not if so-and-so wins. Love one another, period.
Well, and your book is really all about relationships, and what is it that we can do then at the end of the day to either continue a relationship? We don't want to do something that's going to discourage a relationship, that regardless of any kinds of results, we want to maintain that relationship, don't we?
Yeah. Sometimes it's easy for us to love the people who think like us, who walk like us, who talk like us, but really a better indicator of how well we love is how do you treat the person with whom you disagree the most? That's really how you can tell how much you love.
Good word from Karen Eamon, Proverbs 31 ministry speaker and bestselling author, and her latest book called Listen, Love, Repeat. And she had a conversation with Joe Bender. You'll be able to hear that here in an upcoming show on Connecting Faith. You know, maybe you don't want to talk politics today, but could you use politics maybe as a bridge to talk about sharing faith?
Musician Jason Gray knows that God can work in and through the trials of life. And his faith in God and the encouragement of others have been vital for him. Hi, I'm Steve Douglas, and Jason shares his thoughts.
The people I admire the most in my life are people who have gone through great pain, and there's been something about that pain that has made them more tender and a better listener and less judgmental and more loving, more patient.
And Jason says he's learned a lot through life experiences.
This is my favorite reversal in the kingdom of God, that we have a place to bring the worst that happens to us. And if we bring it again and again to our Heavenly Father, He takes it and He turns it around and He makes something beautiful out of it.
That is exactly right. God can use even your painful life experiences for His glory. Do you want to hear more stories? Why don't you go to makingyourlifecount.com?
Hey, coming up tomorrow on Connecting Faith, we're going to talk to Dr. John Trent, founder of Strong Families. There's a first ever national conference on grandparenting coming up next week in Dallas, hosted by Chuck Swindoll's church. We'll get Dr. John Trent, who's one of the keynote speakers, talking about that and more. Hope that you can join us here on Connecting Faith again. Listen to the podcast anytime online at myfaithradio.com.